Thratia had retrieved Ripka's blues and forced her to wear them. It shamed her to know that she would stand before the people of Aransa in judgment while wearing the uniform she'd donned to protect them, but the warden had insisted. Thratia sat on the mud-brick bench beside her, giving them the illusion of intimacy. All around her, Thratia's militiamen skulked, hands ready on weapons. The guardhouse was still night-chilled, and they'd lit only the bare minimum of lamps to stave off the desert heat a little longer.
I am sorry about this, you know?
If you were truly sorry, you'd let me go.
Can't do it. I know you think I'm after the power, Captain, but the truth is, I want the best for this city. The only way it's going to survive what is coming is with a strong hand at the tiller. Something Galtro just couldn't provide.
So you got rid of him then? I'm going to die anyway. You might as well relieve the burden with a confession before I go.
Galtro was dead the moment he took that job. It was just a matter of time.
His wardenship candidacy?
No. Being the mine master. You haven't been here long enough to see it, Captain. I know you come from a town with no cell mines. The truth of it is, souls just don't last in that job. Suicides or a vengeance killing, one or the other always catches up eventually.
He was good at his job. He made sure the miners were safe as they could be. Only had one accident during his whole tenure.
One's enough. Regardless, there are other duties that come with that job.
Like what?
Thratia tipped her chin in the direction of the white coat. Kalia had her back to them, long and straight.
What will you do with Aransa, Thratia?
You won't be around to see it, lass. And that's a blessing.
Thratia pushed to her feet and dusted her hands.
Best prepare your conscience, yeah? Sun's coming up.
I have a favor to ask of you, Warden.
Ask it.
Whatever happens, do not instigate a purge.
Genuine surprise widened Thratia's eyes, pursed her lips. Ripka held her breath as the ex-commodore cast a sideways glance at Kalia. The white coat wasn't paying them any attention. Thratia turned, leaned down to bring her face closer to Ripka's.
Understand this. I will not allow such a thing to happen. Never.
Ripka leaned her back against the cool wall and watched Thratia stroll to Kalia's side. Of course, Thratia never wanted a purge for Aransa, but the Doppel Surehead needed a stick of fear to jab Ripka with. Ripka studied Kalia, or tried to. Her attention kept drifting to her once sergeant. Banch stood beside the white coat at parade rest. He kept trying to catch Ripka's eye, to give her some sort of signal that he was sorry, that he'd never wanted any of this to happen. That he had no idea he'd be the new watch captain. He didn't even know Ripka had recommended him. Talon lingered nearby, back straight enough to match the white coats, a barely controlled tremble of fear in the tightness of his jaw. Though he stood at attention, his eyes were downcast, his mouth curved into a soft frown. Ripka couldn't work out why Thratia had decided to drag the rookie out here for this, and decided she didn't care. Whatever the reason, there was nothing she could do about it now. Banch was a good man. He wouldn't be fool enough to let his emotions be played by a common murderer. He'd take care of the city when she was gone. Gone. She had to stop thinking like that. Deaton was shifty as the night, but he had a core of goodness in him. He wouldn't let her down if he could help it. As the sun crept skyward, spilling warmth and light through the cracks in the brick, she couldn't help but think of all the things she might have done differently in her life. All the paths that wouldn't have led her to this bench.
Time to go, Captain.
Ripka stood and straightened her blues. She did not let them help her up the ladder. On the scorched, the heat rose before the sun did. Deaton felt the first probing rays of it before the light crested the flat and ruddy horizon, bringing prickling sweat and parched lips. He shifted the two wide shoulders of his stolen shirt and dreamed of water. He wouldn't dare drink. The veneer was too thin, and his struggle to keep it all in place was doing more to make him sweat than the sun ever could. Just ahead rose the guardhouse roof from which the guilty of Aransa were given their choice with the rising of the sun, face the axe, or walk the black wash and let the desert decide the depth of your sin. Ripka wouldn't take the axe, he was sure of that. She would take her chances with the wilderness that had forged her. If she didn't, Deaton was going to be mighty upset. Light snapped free of the horizon at last, chasing down the heat. The mud and stone buildings of Aransa grew warm and vibrant in the rays, no longer gray and dingy under the shadow of night. The people gathered were anxious and tense, a bitter mingling of excitement and heat and fear. Dark figures emerged upon the roof, familiar to him even in silhouette. Thratia, slender and full of swagger, Ripka, stiff-backed and stern. Thratia's militiamen came behind, and the round-shouldered form of Ripka's sergeant. Another watcher hovered beside the sergeant, his movements furtive and uncertain, but the cut of his coat gave away his profession. And another Deaton didn't recognize. Squinting, he watched the unfamiliar figure. The Doppel? No, she wouldn't dare come this close. Thratia was bound to have a sensitive amongst her guards, and she would have them on high alert this morning. The unknown figure was tall, rectangular beneath the hem of a long coat. Whatever was being said up there, Deaton couldn't hear it. His focus on holding his cell mask was so intense he didn't dare think of anything else. He sidled up to the crowd and weaved his way through while keeping his head down, his face hidden. Someone grabbed his wrist, jerked him to the side. Deaton staggered, jostling those pressed up against him, and glanced back to see a stone-gray sleeve attached to a rather scarred face.
Just what in the shit are you doing? Hey!
Deaton jerked his arm, yanking his wrist free, as he bolted forward, spurred on by fear, shoving people aside in his need to reach the roof before Ripka could make her decision. Luckily, no one kept an eye on the guardhouse door. He burst through the door and scrambled across the small room and found the ladder to the roof. He grabbed the rungs and hauled himself up into the full light of the sun.
Hold him.
Rough hands dragged him off the last bit of the ladder as he split his attention between holding the cell mask and watching the people on the roof.
Well, well.
Thratia prodded his face with one finger. It was just a thin layer. He didn't have the requisite skills to change its structure, to shift the color, but he could make it thin enough to make it clear. And even clear cell rippled when touched. One little ripple was all he needed to sell the thing.
What are you up to, Handing?
I'm honored. You think my technique is the truth. But we both know Handing doesn't have enough cell sense to illusion up a turnip, let alone a face.
Then why don't you show us your real face, Doppel?
You don't deserve it.
All right then, creature. Where's my ship?
I destroyed your ship. Smashed it against the sand, every little bit of it, over and over again.
You broke my ship?
Don't believe me? Take a look.
He gestured to the black wash and prayed Tibbs had made it look good. Thratia snatched a sighting glass from Kalia's outstretched hand and snapped the little brass tube open. She brought it to her eye and scanned the darkened sands. Even Deaton could see it with his naked eye, a little heap of brown wood in the middle of the obsidian sand.
Why?
The false cabin hadn't supplied nearly enough material to make it look like a whole ship had been destroyed out there.
This city, your city, murdered my son!
Thratia rolled her eyes, all the hot anger evaporating from her posture. She stepped forward, laced her fingers under his chin, and tipped it to the side.
Careful now. I've been having a little chat with my friend, the Lady Kalia. You see her there?
She turned his head for him, just enough to see the willow-thin figure of a woman dressed in pale blue silks, a slim-cut white coat on, despite the heat. Everything about her posture radiated boredom, but she was looking at him with eyes so intense it made him want to squirm. Fear shot straight through him, tingling his toes and chilling his gut so fast he nearly lost his hold on the cell. He grabbed it again, straining his senses, and nearly overdid it. The corners of Thratia's eyes crinkled, recognition of his struggle.
She let me know a little secret, understand? Let me know that that cunning fop Deaton Handing is a very wanted man indeed.
So what? The people gathered here to see a Doppel squaring off with their new warden. Officially, the punishment for Doppels is death. I choose to walk the black.
Thratia pushed his head away with a flick of her wrist and strode toward Kalia. Deaton watched them confer, heads close together. He stole a glance at Ripka and saw nothing short of iron-hot hatred in her eyes. Well, at least she believed he was the Doppel.
I've decided.
Thratia broke away from Kalia and stood near the edge of the guardhouse roof. She held her arms out, palms spread up in welcome to the sun.
We have two guilty souls before us this morning, Aransa. Your corrupted watch captain conspired with this abomination, this Doppel, to burn the hob to a husk and steal my ship. Those very boots the Doppel is wearing left prints in the blood at the place of my master Galtro's death. The watch captain was seen lurking about Sir Hub just before the flames began. And here now, a confession. The Doppel tells me it smashed the Larkspur, turned it to kindling in the sand. That ship was not just mine, Aransa. That ship was meant to bridge the long gap between this fine city and all the others of the Scorched, to carry supplies and news, to have our streets run flush with trade. And now we are stymied. We are thwarted by this creature's misplaced revenge. In my mind, I am certain that the watch captain acted in good faith. Hers is a loyal soul, a brownwash soul, and the Doppel clearly has twisted her into believing she was doing right. It grieves me, but she is still guilty. Guilty not only of theft and destruction, but of hiding from you, Aransa, her meager ability to sense Selium. I know it is difficult to believe, but this woman hid her ability to keep herself from the line, to keep herself in the watch where she supposed she serves you better. Young Watcher Talen here observed her use these skills himself.
I'm not as sensitive.
Then why do you carry Selium on you? I can sense it from here, my dear.
Ripka's lips pursed, her shoulders shot back. Confident the White Coat was wrong. Confident that she could prove herself innocent of at least this accusation. The presence of Sel was slight about her, but with Deaton's senses ratcheted so high up, he could feel it now. Little slivers of the stuff hidden in the seams of her blues. A memory of Pelkaya Ripka wearing her matching jacket.
Your coat, please?
Momentary confusion crested Ripka's brow, but she slid the garment off and passed it over.
Watch carefully.
The White Coat lifted the coat into the air so that those gathered could see. She slipped a knife into her hand, a simple thing for cutting twine and paper, and inserted it into the seam running along the coat's lapel. With a flick of the wrist, she opened the cloth. A slender, pearlescent wisp wafted into the searing light of day. Deaton kept his gaze on Ripka. Her expression twisted. First bewilderment, then bright, hot anger as realization settled. There was nothing she could do, no protest she could make that would undo the damage done. Any attempt to quibble would make her look like a gibbering fool. Without a word, Ripka extended her hand for her coat. Kalia handed it back without comment. Ripka shrugged it on, straightening the sliced lapel, shoulders stiff with more than pride now. A little spark of pride burned in Deaton's chest, and he held himself straighter in her shadow.
I will not pass judgment on this. The theft and fire are crime enough to land her here. And so, the choice. The Doppel has already attested its wish to walk the black. What say you, Miss Leshy? Will the sand cleanse your sins, or the axe?
I will walk.
So be it. Watch Captain Banch, please direct the condemned.
Deaton was thrust forward by the men holding him and made to stand side by side with Ripka, their backs to the crowd and their faces toward the dawn. It was already oppressively hot, vision-warping waves of heat rising up from the glittering black sands. From the corner of his eye, Deaton could see Ripka, steady but wide-eyed. He wanted to say something to alleviate her fear, to give her some hope, but he didn't dare for fear of being overheard. And anyway, she was doing her best not to look at him, her lips held in thin disgust and her back straight as a mast pole. Facing her death with dignity and pride, he didn't dare sully that. Thratia leaned over his shoulder.
I'm not fooled, Handing. Enjoy your last moments of freedom.
The black sands rose up to meet Ripka faster than she expected. She landed palms first and rolled through the glittering dust. When she stood, her knees were shaky.
You all right?
She glanced over at the Doppel, its miner's attire covered in black dust and its face skewed from the fall. The Deaton mask was twisted, one cheek drooping so much that the cellium had lost its color and returned to its usual prismatic shimmer. It looked as if the heat of the desert was melting the creature away, and the fact that it looked like Deaton unsettled her greatly.
Leave me alone, creature.
Ripka took her first few steps across the black. With each step, she grew to realize that her blues were dangerous to more than her pride. She unbuttoned her coat, let it hang open to catch the breeze on the thin, off-white shirt she wore beneath. But she would not drop it. Not this close to the city. Never mind that one of her own watchers had betrayed her. And for what? Thratia wouldn't give Talon any favors, not after this. Not after he'd proven how thin his allegiance really was. To be accused of arson and theft was one thing. To have her own people point at her and say she betrayed her service to them was just too much. Precious water rimmed her eyes, and she wiped it furiously away.
Easy now, Ripka.
Captain.
Ripka looked around. The city wall loomed behind her, but any sheltering shadow it may have offered was blasted clear by the sun's unforgiving angle. Faint white glints winked at her between the matrix of the black sands, and with a sinking stomach, she recognized them for what they were. Bones, broken and scattered. Most were unrecognizable now, their shape worn down by the bite of obsidian, their placement skewed by the winds. She looked upon them all. She'd done this. She had created this grisly graveyard in sending the condemned to walk. And now she was about to lie down and join them. Ripka pushed aside all feeling and trained her gaze on the path she must walk to survive. In the direction of the sun, the Fireline Ridge rose, its pocked back looking like the whipped hide of a great beast, the smokestack jutting like a broken spine from the middle. It cast a shadow across the sand, reaching toward her. A false promise. There was no way she would make it there before the heat took her. Maybe she could find something in the wreckage of the Larkspur to shade herself with. It seemed so close, that humped shelter of wood. But she knew all too well that the distance was distorted by the wavering horizon, that whatever she found in the Larkspur would offer little relief. Under the full light of day, the black grains absorbed the heat and threw it back at you until you collapsed from heat sickness. She knew the signs, the symptoms, dizziness, delirium, clotted tongue, and a cessation of sweat. The backs of her hands already felt dry, her tongue too big for her mouth. Soon her skin would begin to blister, to peel, to slough off to the sand below. If she were lucky, she might faint from the pain before organ failure began, before her eyes began to burst their fluids from their sockets. Even if she did make it to the ridge, her life was forfeit. The climbing there was rough, the heat made it scorching, and if she made it up to one of the facilities on the ridge, she would be recognized. Your life, once condemned, was free for the taking. And with accusations of hiding cell sense riding the winds, there wasn't a soul alive that had ever offered her shelter. She urged herself toward the ridge with long, ground-eating strides, and the Doppel pushed along to catch up.
Angle south towards the baths.
I'll go where I please.
Pits below. Do you still not see it?
She turned to regard the Doppel. Its face was still melting, pearlescent cellium mixed with the diamond glitter of sweat. Ripka brought her hand up to shade her eyes and still had to squint. The reflection from the sand was so bright. The Doppel grinned at her in a stupid, familiar way.
You dust-swallowing idiot! What?
Easy now. Save it until we're at the ridge. Thratius got me figured out, but the rest don't, and I'd rather not give them any ideas.
Why?
She can't search the city in earnest for a Doppel the people think is out here dying in the black. Understand? Gives us a chance to find her still.
Why do you care?
Keep pushing me, and I'll find reasons not to.
Even beneath the cellium, his cheeks were slapped red by the sun, rosy despite his deep tan. Sweat poured off him, and he swayed a bit where he stood.
You injured?
Not yet.
Who's keeping that cellium on you anyway? You got the Doppel hiding out here somewhere?
I told you I don't know where she is.
Then you're still...
Just walk, all right? I've got enough on my mind. This isn't easy.
He trudged off, cutting a tight line toward the baths, and she followed at his side. To take her mind off the heat, she stole glances at him as he struggled along beside her. While the sun's blaze was tough on her, it seemed to be taking an extreme toll on him. Each step was slightly off-center from the last, causing him to sway and veer at random. By midway across the wash, his clothes were soaked through. Watching his struggle made her own pain feel small.
You have to rest.
I can't stop too long. The sun doesn't stop just because you have.
Ripka tore a strip from her shirt and tied it around her forehead to keep the sweat from her eyes. He stared at it, mouth open.
Want me to make you one?
I can't.
She grabbed his arm, holding him upright.
Look, whatever you're doing with that psyllium is going to kill you before the sun does. You've got to stop it. We're far enough away from the wall, no one will notice. Just drop it. Don't ha at me. Let it go, Deaton. Now.
First time you've ever called me Deaton.
Then you better listen.
He closed his eyes. She knew in that moment he was going down. She dug her fingers into his arm, desperate that the small dose of pain would snap him back to himself. Instead, he shook her off.
Let me concentrate, woman.
Psyllium poured off his face, neck, and upper chest like thick syrup. Most of her experience with the stuff had been with it contained, hidden away in the buoyancy sacks of ferries or cargo transports. To be so close to the raw material, it made her small hairs stand up, despite the heat. Deaton opened his eyes, and the sheets of it entwined to form a ball about the size of her two fists pushed together. Worth enough to pay her sergeant for half a year.
Need to weigh it down.
She dragged off her coat and threw it over the ball, letting the heavy material do some good work for once. Deaton's shoulders slumped. He brought one hand up to rub at his eyes while the other fumbled in his pocket.
Damn stuff wants to go up, 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 no matter what.
He pulled out a bit of twine and tied her coat around the hovering ball, making it look like the balloons used for short-range transport vessels. Taking firm hold of the dangling twine, he wrapped it around his fingers a few times and gave it a tug to secure it.
Can't tie it to your wrist unless you want to lose that hand. And you definitely don't want this much sail tied to your belt.
Deaton looked hale already, or at least better than the stumbling, sweating shade of a man he had been. He was even smiling, which she thought was pretty stupid considering the circumstances. The psyllium pushed against its containment, flattening the top curve of the balloon just enough to cast a small shadow over them both. To Ripka, that sliver of shade was the most luxurious thing she'd ever experienced. They trudged forward, heads bent and necks extended, as if they could reach the wreckage of the Larkspur faster if only they could stretch out their bodies.
Almost there.
As they drew near, Ripka frowned, eyeing the wreckage with care. She'd seen the Larkspur only once before, but she was certain there wasn't nearly enough wood to cover the whole ship smashed on the sands before them.
What is...
Welcome to Tib's cabin. We were saving it to cover the disappearance of the Larkspur, but this seemed a more pressing matter.
It did look like the cabin of a ship, one that had been dropped on its side and cracked open like an egg. The walls leaned outward at crazy angles, the fresh milled timber filling the air with the warm scent of some sort of resinous hardwood. Stunned, she followed Deaton into what was left of the shelter, and nearly wept with joy when she saw Tibbs had stashed a full amphora of water amongst the rubble. Without a word, they sat in the makeshift shade and shared out the sand-warmed water in slow, careful draws. After some rummaging, Deaton found a cloth-wrapped package of dried meat and a small jar of pulp leaf salve. Beneath a broken beam, he discovered a wide-brimmed hat, the edges singed, and Ripka was shocked to see his eyes glisten and his face screw up with the threat of tears.
You all right?
Fine, fine.
He pulled the hat on his head, then offered her a scarf to cover her own head with, and the packet of meat. Despite being hard and stringy, it was the most delicious thing she'd ever tasted. When the food and water was gone, Deaton looked over at Ripka.
Ready for the final press?
You think we'll make it?
Oh, Captain, it's not the heat that kills you. It's Thratia's assassins waiting on the ridge.
Ripka glanced sideways at him and saw him grinning like an idiot, as usual.
Wonderful.
She handed the now half-empty jar of pulp leaf salve to him, already feeling her skin soften and cool from its application. He began to apply the remaining salve with extreme care, his bandaged hand trembling with the effort as he held the jar in his good hand. After a moment, Ripka knelt before him. Without a word, she took the jar and pushed his wounded hand aside, knowing just where he'd gotten that particular injury, and took over smearing the salve against his already blistering arms.
Thank you.
Said I wouldn't let you walk.
That worked out well.
Best I could do under the circumstances.
She finished applying the salve and stood, tossing the empty jar to the sand. He sat there a moment, eyes drooping, sweat turning the fringe of his hair into spikes against his brow, the psyllium balloon tugging at his good fingers. The phantom of Tybalt's words came back to her, his warning of Deaton's temper, and she shunted them aside, guilt beginning to gnaw at her. No matter that he was in some way responsible for the fire that had seen her shoved out here, he'd come back. Though it killed her pride to admit it, he'd saved her when he didn't have to. They locked gazes, and she looked away, proffering her hand.
Time to go and see what Thratia has waiting for us.
Well, this will be interesting.
He took her hand and stood, his little balloon bobbing crazily. She forced herself along beside him, huddling close to keep under the shade of the balloon.
You could always throw psyllium in their eyes.
Yeah, something like that.
The weight of Ripka's coat did most of the work for him, but he couldn't get lazy, couldn't let his concentration slip. Maybe the Doppel could keep it all together without so much as a thought, but all it took for Deaton to lose it was a momentary distraction, just a stubbed toe or a glance at something shiny, or fiery pits, the way Ripka'd looked at him when she'd thanked him, and the cell would be free to ooze out from the imperfect seal of the coat, to climb up high and never come down again. He wondered how much was up there and where it stopped.
Don't distract yourself.
He clenched his jaw and focused. Ripka had been divested of her weapons, so that meant it was up to him. He still had his old long knife. Not that it would do much good in his hands. His skill with such things was rudimentary at best, but he did have the cell.
To throw in their eyes, indeed.
He pulled out the knife, looked at it, passed it to Ripka.
Here, you hang on to this.
You'll need it.
I'm a danger to myself with that thing. At least you've had some proper training.
She took it with care and turned it around in her hand, bright metal glinting white hot under the glare of the sun. He'd always presumed it was a pretty good knife. At least the person he'd pinched it from didn't seem the type to mess about with inferior goods, and from the way she admired it, he supposed that assumption was correct.
It's in the Imperial style, but I can work with it.
Velarthians even make their knives differently?
They're lighter, usually. They'd call this a short sword, since it's about the length of the average forearm. They've got hollow handles that sometimes get filled with psyllium to make them move easier, but this one's empty.
Yeah, I needed that tiny bit of cell in a hurry once. Long time ago.
Makes sense, considering I got the thing in Velarthia.
You've been to Velarthia?
Not willingly. More importantly, can you use it?
Sure.
She took a few experimental swipes.
Not much different from my cudgel in length. Just lighter.
Do a lot of slashing with your cudgel, do you?
Every day, just about. Though I suppose not anymore.
You'll live through this, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Deaton kept his mouth shut. He wasn't any good at making people feel better, unless it consisted of him making an ass of himself for their amusement. Whatever was going on in Ripka's head was her business, and he figured it was safer for the sanity of everyone involved if he didn't try and mess with it. She was focused on getting through alive, and right now that was all that mattered. Especially considering he was starting to rethink his boast about the heat not killing you. Tibbs's cash had done him a world of good, but his earlier attempts to keep the cell smooth and calm had taken too much out of him. He had no idea how Ripka was staying on her feet, but he guessed it wasn't easy, as she didn't look any better than he did. At least, he hoped she didn't look better than he did. But the ridge was getting closer. They were near enough now that the angle of the sun threw the shadow of it in their path, and though the shade was minimal, it was a blessed relief from the full-on glare. The salt baths hovered above them, the ferry dock sticking out from the rock face. There wasn't any light seeping from the main entrance, or spa-goers moving about the place.
Looks like Thratia shut down more than just the lines to the hub.
Makes sense. If she's got people waiting for us, she won't want any witnesses.
Why would she care if I survived the Black?
Same reason she cares about finding a ship. It's a matter of pride. And it would catch up to her eventually. Undermine her iron fist.
Wish I could bust her down.
You can't. Now hush and keep that knife ready.
Sword.
Sure.
This section of the fire line boasted no value to be had. There were no psyllium pockets, no thermal vents, not even cacti could be farmed in the listless soil. The stones were craggy and pitted, giant broken teeth rising up out of the sand. It was a good place to hide something, if you had the mind to, and Deaton was fairly certain Thratia did. If he'd shown up with the Doppel, then she'd want someone here, ready to act. She just wasn't the kind of woman to leave loose ends hanging. Neither was the White Coat. He slowed down, his grip on the string tethering the ball of cell so tight his fingers were turning purple. Knowing he wasn't much use face to face, he drifted back to let Ripka scout ahead, relying on whatever skills she had been given by her watch training. Surely they had to train the watch to handle ambushes. Straining his senses, he couldn't make out any cell nearby, which was probably just proof that he wasn't very good at sussing out the stuff. With the smokestack so close, his senses should have been overwhelmed, but they weren't, as usual. All he could make out was the slight throb of the ball hidden in Ripka's coat. Sometimes he didn't know why he bothered trying. He let his sensing attempt drop. She swiped the knife sword at a man suspiciously devoid of uniform. The would-be assassin lunged sword first from amongst the broken rocks at her, but she knocked his blade against a rock. Ripka brought the blade back nice and quickly to slit the man's stomach. Wiping hair from her eyes, she scooped up the dead man's blade and thrust it handle out at Deaton. He stared at it as if it were a viper.
Take it.
That's, not really a good idea.
Well, I can't use two, now can I?
She thrust it forward again, insistent. He grasped the grip at his wounded hand and took a few experimental swipes. The disdainful curl of Ripka's lip told him all he needed to know about his form.
There will be others.
Of course there will.
Well, aren't you just full of sunshine?
I am.
Ah, right.
They moved side by side into the scattered rocks, in theory covering one another's flank. Ripka positioned herself on his left, the side holding the cell. As they crept closer to the first incline of hard rock, which led up to the cave network that made the baths possible, something bit him. He looked down at his shoulder to see a long gash welling with blood.
Oh, those bastards!
Behind him, stuck butt up in the sand, was a thick black quiver. Another arrow sped by him and snapped its neck against a rock. Ripka tore off at a sprint, angling straight for the crossbowman's hiding spot. It was a narrow ledge, tucked up in the rock face to the left, and it didn't look like he'd have enough time to get out or draw another shot before she got to him. But there were a few standing rocks near the ledge, tall and wide, a little extra shadow bleeding out around their edges.
Look out!
Ripka slid to a stop, kicking up a wide cloud of dust as three men loped into her path. Every last one of them had a sword, and every last one looked ready to use it. Ripka took a step back, getting out of strike distance, and slipped into a ready stance. Damn fool of a woman. Deaton looked at the sword in his hand, the weapon he didn't know how to use. He looked at the cell floating just above him, the weapon he was too scared to use.
Run, woman, quick!
She hesitated, and the man nearest lunged for her side. She knocked his thrust wide with her blade and tore off back towards Deaton. Distancing himself from what was happening, he focused on the little ball of cell under the coat. He segmented off a piece half the size of one fist and pulled it out into the open. The cell ball shot forward faster than any arrow and struck the central man in the chest. Deaton felt his focus sharpen as the would-be assassin glanced down at the innocuous glittering ball. He saw the slow confusion growing, wrinkling his brow. Deaton unleashed the temptation that had been dogging him since the day he set foot back on this sun-cursed continent. He let his anger flood through the cell, all his hate and his fear. Under the brunt of his fury, the little glittering ball tore itself to pieces. The concussion punched the assassin's chest, staggering him back a step. Fire so bright even Deaton was temporarily blinded, speared in all directions, competing with the hot eye of the sun and winning. When Deaton's sight returned to him, all that was left of the man was a charcoaled, rended mass, and his companions weren't spared the conflagration. Both had been consumed.
Sweet skies.
Ripka must have thrown herself down or been thrown, because she was covered in sand and sitting, her back to him, her face glued to the spot where the attackers had been. Even the rock behind them was blackened, and no more arrows issued from the cleft. Deaton stepped to her side and offered his hand. He pretended not to notice when she flinched away from it.
Get up. We have to keep moving.
She grabbed his hand. He hauled her up and gave her time to brush the sand from her clothes as best she could. He still had some cell left, and the strain of keeping it contained weighed double on him now. He still had his anger. Sweet, practical Ripka. Ripka took up point as they transitioned from sand to stone. This section of the fire line was flat, having given itself up to the march of time long before the city was ever founded. Its surface was covered in large toothy boulders and spills of talus. Deep caverns wormed through the rock, gaping at its black and forbidding. Some of them led up to the baths, some down into the heart of the world.
Tibbs will have left a signal. Look for it.
Her steps slowed as she scanned the landscape unfolding before them with more care. They saw the marker at the same time, a little strip of white cloth tied to a brown bit of scrub along the edge of a cave's chasmal mouth. Before they entered it, Deaton took a moment to tug the signal from the scrub, lest they be followed. Within the cavern, all was dark, and Ripka grabbed his arm to keep him from walking smack into her.
Wait, listen.
I can't hear a thing.
No footsteps. It should be clear, but I can't see a thing. Can you use the cell to light something small?
I'd be more likely to blow my own head off.
Never mind. Step slowly and let me guide you.
Her fingers tightened around his wrist, and she tugged him along behind. It was hard going, not seeing anything but the back of her head, and even that was little more than a smoky smudge. There was a glow up ahead, warm and welcoming. The kind of glow only oil lamps and candle wicks could provide. The cave led out into the venting grounds, where Deaton had burned his own trousers for the sake of winding up an irritating upper crust. He wished he still had the fine tailored coat he'd gotten from that game, instead of the soiled and oversized miner's attire he'd pilfered from Pelkaya. Maybe Tibbs had grabbed it on his way out. The man wasn't likely to leave anything of theirs behind. He gave the little bird signal he and Tibbs used on occasion. A figure leapt from behind one of the craggier vents, looking an awful lot like the dead men they'd already left behind. Clothes black-red to blend with the rocks, sword out and ready. Ripka stepped between Deaton and the advancing assassin, sword drawn. The would-be murderer advanced, passing under one of the tub's ledges. The killer looked up just in time to see the shadow of the rock that had been dumped down on his head. Before Ripka could get her blade near him, the killer's face burst, easy as a rotting plum. He crumpled like a smashed buoyancy sack and sent up wild sprays of blood from his ruined face. Tibbs stuck his head over the side and squinted down at the crushed man.
Oh, good. That rat had been wandering around here staying undercover for a full half mark. I thought you'd never get here to bait him out.
Happy to help, Tibbs. Now where in the pit is my flyer?
Get on up here and I'll take you to it.
Deaton led the way through the venting floor. When they reached the upper levels, Newchum came to greet them, looking pristine in his beige uniform and crisp little hat. There was, annoyingly, not a drop of sweat on him. Tibble, on the other hand, looked like he'd taken a tumble down a sand dune into a mud pit, and that heartened Deaton some.
Chum.
Good morning, Lord Honding. Captain Leshy, may I interest you two in a much-needed bath and some fresh clothes?
No time for niceties. Thratia and her watchdog are going to start getting jumpy when her gallows men aren't back with us in a mark or so.
Direct to the flyer, then.
Onward, my good man.
Deaton let the steward lead the way amongst the winding platforms and in between the wide baths. Tibbs dropped back beside him.
Thratia buying it?
Nope. And it seems she and the Imperial have had a little chat about yours truly.
I say, I distinctly remember having warned you about this exact situation, sir.
Are you rubbing it in?
Yes, I am.
Tibbs and Newchum had stashed the flyer on a little outcropping on the back edge of the salt baths. Its buoyancy sacks bulged above it with fresh life, and an extra had been strapped to the bottom. He caught sight of the daisies and Happy Birthday Vura scrawled all over the old leather in purple paint. His throat clotted, his chest clenched. He closed his eyes and drew a breath, focusing on keeping his psellium ball still. He'd live with those daisies. For Bell. The little craft floated just off the edge of the cliff, securely tied with two thick ropes. Down the side, a rope ladder hung, its end trailing through the empty air at the height of Deaton's hip. It was a welcome sight, his little bird all patched up and flying true. He just wished it were bigger.
We're going to be real close to capacity now, so mind your movements.
If you're overloaded, sir, I will volunteer to stay behind.
You sure as shit will not. Thratia will find her way here eventually, and some sniveling rat will remember you were the only one in the baths when we escaped. And then what will you do? Run back to your old friends for protection? No. No arguments. All of you up that rope, now.
Tibbs swung on first, scrambling up the ladder in a way that reminded Deaton of a knobby-limbed lizard. He cringed and waved Ripka ahead. She stored her knife thing with care before climbing cautiously skyward. The steward went next, and Deaton was proud of his vessel for not swaying in the slightest. He checked the string, securing the cell to his hand, and it was only his reaching to tighten the knot that kept his arm from being skewered by an arrow.
Hooray!
Deaton lunged for the ladder, but went down hard, flat on his chest on the unforgiving rock. Cold shock seized him, radiating from his calf. Deaton could see boots charging up the walkway toward him, Imperial boots. They'd take him alive, not so much the others. Ignoring the fire in his leg, he surged sideways and pulled the slip knots on the flyer's tie lines.
Deaton, no! What are you doing?
Deaton reached his senses out, felt for the cell in the sack of his flyer, and shoved. The craft lurched away, and the shadow of the flyer that had lain over him slipped off into the blue, leaving him to face the music alone. Something tugged on his fingers. He looked up, saw the ball of cell escaping from under the cover of Ripka's coat. Refocusing, he gathered together what cell was left outside the coat, let the blue cloth slump to a heap by his head. He reshaped it, making it a glittering, hovering windowpane. The man leading the Imperial troops smirked at it, suspecting it a Doppel's trick.
It's a little late to try and hide your face from us.
The Imperial waved his men forward, and just as they stepped through the membrane of cell, Deaton let loose. Deaton knew he'd done real damage, but not enough. More Imperials emerged from the baths. They were hesitant, coming slow and scared. Wasn't much he could do now, but he hoped that display had at least made one of them wet themselves. He was grinning when unconsciousness took him. It was all Ripka could do to keep from falling over the edge as the flyer shot through the empty air.
Shit!
Tibble stood as he worked the craft's rigging in a desperate attempt to slow their flight.
That's it! Pull it round!
The steward was also on his feet, working the mess of rope and pulleys. Whatever they were up to, it must have worked, because the flyer shuddered and swayed, slaloming to a stop suddenly. After making sure whatever they'd done was secure, Tibble and the steward abandoned their posts and raced towards her end of the flyer. The steward held up a hand to guard his eyes against the sun's glare.
I can't see any detail from this far off, but the cliff is definitely blackened.
I can't see much better myself. Damn men must have blown us halfway across the scorched. Sometimes I think there's nothing between his ears but grit and piss.
Shall we go back?
Sure, but just to make sure he's still alive. I reckon they'll be gone by the time we get there. Deaton will have left a handprint for me if he's still kicking. And anyway, it's on the way.
On the way to where?
To see that damn Doppel, of course. I'm thinking she's the only one who can lend us a hand getting Deaton out of the chop.
She's a murderer, Tibble. She killed a good man, maybe two.
Yeah, well, she can join the club. You can't tell me you're not a member yourself. No one is a watcher long without taking a life that deserves to be left alone.
I'm just saying she can't be trusted.
No one can, kid. No one at all.
And just how in the pits do you know where she is? She has the Larkspur, doesn't she? Could very well be halfway to the ass end of the world by now and we wouldn't know it.
Had a lot of time to think, Captain, while you two were busy trying to get yourselves killed. We'll find her. Only one place she could be, truth be told.
Tibbs brushed past Ripka and went about resetting the rigging. Tibble pulled and slung ropes, heaved on gear handles, and swiveled strange levers.
Help me with this thing, will you, new chum?
The steward moved to crank a gear shaft, which seemed to be connected to one of the flyer's rear propellers. At the front, back, and center edges, large fan blade propellers were mounted. Ripka followed the contraptions as best she could and guessed that they were connected to a singular drive shaft just behind the helm where a dashboard of cranks and levers were. Feeling useless, she watched as Tibble made way for the steward to join him at the helm, and both of them heaved too. The fans started spinning far faster than Tibble and the steward were turning the cranks. The flyer slid forward, smooth as silk. Once they fell into a rhythm, the land began to slip by in a rush.
Can I help?
Sure, you can haul up the tie lines.
Right.
Ripka tried to look confident as she made her way to the first rope. But the flyer had a bit of a wobble in its movement that made her knees feel like jelly. She glared at him and tried to stride firmly the rest of the way.
You'll get used to it. I'd let you get your legs at a slower speed, but we don't have much time to mess around here.
I'll adjust.
Tibble just nodded. She knelt beside the edge of the ship and began hauling up the dangling rope. By the third loop, she wished she hadn't volunteered herself at all. She was not finished by the time they reached the cliffside. The flyer slowed in smooth increments, giving her the sensation that they were all sliding to a stop. Ripka stared at the half-coiled rope in her hands. She tossed what she held aside and shoved herself to unsteady feet. Under Tibble's watchful eye, she scrambled back to the dangling rope ladder and climbed down, desperate for solid land beneath her feet. When her toes touched down, she had to grip the ladder to keep from pitching over the edge of the cliff. Tibble poked his head over the edge and squinted down at her.
You all right, Captain?
Oh, just wonderful.
See any signs of him? Any, bits?
There weren't any bits belonging to Deaton that she could see, but there was a whole pitful of blood splashed around. Someone had fallen and rolled in it, smearing it across half the ledge. Wary of toppling into the mess, she took a step forward, still clinging to the ladder, and approached her crumpled coat. Deaton's singed hat lay beside it. She knelt, letting the ladder go, and examined the ruddy ground. In this spot, the blood was minimal. A small pool had spread down where his calf might have been, but there was nothing up above where an injury might have meant death. She reached out and scooped up the limp and filthy hat. Beneath it, the bloody print of a man's hand was splayed, bright and rusty and primal.
He's all right. He left a print.
She stood, not bothering to disguise the shake in her legs. It had been a long, long morning, and some things her pride was just going to have to forget about. Things like going to the Doppel who killed Galtro and Fawd and asking for help. She hobbled back to the ladder, hat tucked under one arm. By the time he woke, Deaton sat on the deck of a large ship, larger even than the Larkspur had been, his back pressed against the wooden rail that wrapped around the ship's deck. His hands were chained above him and were already going numb. He gave them a few experimental shakes to get the blood flowing. He wasn't the only poor creature chained to this ship. A half dozen souls were attached to the same chain he was, each with their wrists cuffed above their heads, and their feet bound before them. The man he'd disturbed had been sleeping beside him, about three steps away, and looked at him with red-shot eyes.
Don't fuss too much, lad, or they'll come and make sure you don't.
Who will come?
Imperials. Who else?
The old man shut his eyes and let his head loll. Deaton craned his neck and saw the now familiar form of that white coat, Kalia, come round the cabin in the center of the ship with a parasol in the crook of her arm to protect her from the sun. A young girl trailed along beside her, matching the dignitary stride for stride. The child was dressed in the same manner as Kalia, in a floor-length shift the color of a clouded pale sky, with her hair braided into elaborate whorls. She couldn't have seen more than 12 monsoons, but she kept her chin up and looked down her nose at him, lips pressed together with contempt. For all her contrivance, her walk, her clothes, the braids in her hair and coal around her eyes, her skin was the shade of wet sand, her eyes hazel and her hair chestnut. A child of the scorched.
Hello?
This is Aella. She will be your leash keeper for the duration of our flight.
Aella, eh? What's a Velathian name doing on a scorched girl?
I was born in Velathia. I am a child of the Empire.
A what now? Cell sensitives aren't born outside the scorched, little lady.
Lord Honding, you are not a naive man in the ways of the Empire, so I will not bother to dissemble with you. Cellium sensitives are not conceived outside of the scorched, but they may be born wherever the parents choose.
Really? And just where are your parents, little miss?
She is a ward of the Empire and is in my care. Now, I must see to other matters. Aella, mind the others, but keep a sharp eye on this one. His ancestors were the first confirmed sensitives, and as such, he believes he is entitled to certain freedoms, which he is not.
Yes, Kalia.
Once Kalia had gone, the girl sat herself across from him on a dusty crate, her small ankles crossed in the fashion of all the young nobles of the Empire. She plucked a small book from her pocket, its face blank, and began to read. With the girl's attention elsewhere, Deaton took a moment to examine his surroundings with care. It was night, so there was little to see outside of the ship, but the lack of city lights and the gentle breeze on his face gave the impression of momentum, or at the very least, being out of doors. Regardless, he was no longer in Aransa, or near enough to see it, and that was a worry.
Where's this ship headed anyway?
Valathia.
Big place, that? Anywhere specific?
Oh, the city, Valathia, not the whole empire.
Too bad. Could have gone on a tour, taken in the sights. Have you ever toured the Century Gates? Grand things. Too bad I punched a hole in them the last time I passed through.
Deaton scowled and shifted his weight, but soon found it impossible to get himself into anything like a comfortable position. His leg was throbbing something awful, and his calf had been wrapped up in sun-bleached linen.
Think I could get a pillow?
You don't stop talking, do you?
Got nothing else to do I?
Most of the other convicts sleep on these trips. You should too.
Sleep? Pits below, girl. These people may have their eyes shut, but they've got their ears wide open. Isn't that right, Grandpa?
Please leave your fellows alone.
My fellows? You sound just like Kalia. Stiff as a board. Come on, lass. You're too young to be tangled up in this heartache.
It's not my heartache. And this isn't the first transport I've monitored on, you know.
Oh, really? You're a real old hand at the slave trade, eh?
I do as I'm told. Just as you will. It's better this way.
And who told you that?
Ayla closed her book with care and laid both of her hands over it. Her hazel gaze was hard and steady, more worldly than any 12-year-old's had a right to be.
Is it true you can make Selium catch fire?
It's a bit more than a fire, lass, but yes.
How?
I don't rightly know, to be honest. The angrier I am, the easier it is.
Show me.
I don't know what ship you think you're on, but I doubt they'll be letting me blow up any cell on this one.
The girl fiddled with the clasp on her bracelet. It was Valathian made, just the same as Kalia's, and once it was unclasped, she teased a small pinch of cell from it, no bigger than a grain of blackwashed sand. She reclasped the bracelet to contain what was left and floated it out toward him, bringing it to rest halfway between them both. Deaton licked his lips, leaning forward in his chains.
Go on, then.
He focused on the granule, let all his anger at having been captured flow toward it. The little pinpoint went up, a glittering spark, gone in a flash. Ayla leaned forward, her eyes bright and clear.
Fascinating. You're one of the more unique deviants we've picked up lately.
The what now?
Just what do you think we're doing on this ship anyway? This is Kalia's pet project. She scours the Scorched looking for cell sensitives whose skill sets fall outside the usual moving and shaping. That man next to you, for example, is here because he can color shift Selium to blue, and only shades of blue, no other color. The woman next to him can make it vibrate so that it sings, like running your finger around the rim of a crystal glass. We're all Kalia's little oddities.
Hmm. And what can you do then?
How many sources of Selium are on this ship?
I'm not that refined, lass.
Then focus on the largest.
Just the buoyancy sacks.
Try again.
Wary, Deaton closed his eyes and extended his senses. There were the inflated buoyancy sacks tied above, huge and out of his reach. Behind him, another presence loomed, long and slender. It rose up over the whole of the ship, hemming it in like an old canvas wagon cover. His eyes snapped open, and he tipped his head back. So far as he could see, there was nothing but black night beyond the ship's railing, spotted with a handful of pale stars. Stars that hadn't moved at all since he had first given them a good look.
You're doing that?
Ha! No. That's another of the deviants, one of my fellows. I'm the one keeping you and everyone else from sensing it. You could have a blob of this stuff right in front of your nose, and I could make you think it's just empty air.
If that sky is an illusion, where are we?
I think you can work that out, Lord Honding.
Ayla went back to her book, but that was fine by him. He had enough to chew on for a while. So Kalia was collecting the weirdos of the Scorched, and he was one of them. When his talents had first been discovered, it had been after he'd blown his whole line to bits and the workers with it. It had been an accident, of course. He thought he was just moving Cell along with the rest until someone pissed him off so badly he'd unconsciously channeled his anger into the line. Because of that, his first few weeks in Valathia had been in a prison cell. A well-earned cell, as far as he was concerned. But once they started the inquiries, the experiments... Ayla seemed all right with her place in life, but he reckoned she'd never seen the pointy end of a scalpel. And anyway, he didn't want a single rotten thing to do with the Empire anymore.
Why did she show me the trick? Why break down the barrier for me? Maybe she's not so safe in her role here. Maybe she wants out too. We're still in Arunsa, I'm pretty sure of that now. But I doubt we'll be much longer. I'm also certain we're on the personal cruiser I'd spotted. Its real size obscured by the onboard talent. Kalia is more than likely just lingering to make damn sure there wasn't a chance at retaking the Larkspur. Or Pelkaya. It'll only be a day or so until she gives up hope. And then what? Try to make my escape over the wastelands? No, that won't do at all. Ayla has shown me where I am. And in doing so, has shown me a way out. I just need to figure out how to use it.
Ayla, if we're still...
Hush, Hunting! Hush!
Despite Tybalt's assurances, Ripka was certain the crater was empty. Tybalt had set them down on the internal edge of the smokestack's collapsed cone, sheltering the ship in a sliver of shade that crept out from the high rim of the Firemount's mouth. This was absolute madness. Wherever the Doppel had gone, Ripka felt sure it wouldn't be to this sulfurous pit. And from the looks of things, she was right.
We're the only ones here, Tybalt.
Oh, she's here. Don't you worry.
Ripka hung back as Tybalt and the steward strode ahead with foolish confidence. Tybalt and the steward stopped halfway across the crater. Tybalt examined the empty air before him, a curious tilt to his head. He reached out a hand and slapped it against thin air. Thin air that gave off a pearlescent ripple. Ripka trudged over to stand with the others.
Come on out now. I know you're hiding in there, little lady.
There was a shimmer in the air just before Ripka's nose, and she leapt back a step. Before her, the world split. Where once there'd been a little more than empty space and rough terrain, the dark cherry-stained broadside of an airship appeared. Just a segment of it, no more than an arm's length across, but the pristine hull was very familiar indeed. The Doppel stepped through the tear, and it melded shut behind her. Ripka stared.
I know you.
Sure you do, Captain.
You're, Pelkaya, that's it. But I remember you being quite a bit older.
The Doppel smiled and brushed a strand of light brown hair from her eyes. Her fingertip touched her skin, and it rippled. Deliberate.
That is what I wanted you to see, yes. Now, why are you here?
I need your help.
I am busy at the moment.
Really? Busy hiding out in this pit-kissed place?
I have my reasons.
I'm betting one of them's the proximity to such a large source of cell. I'm betting you can't get the ship out of the area undetected. And the only reason you haven't been spotted yet is because all of this is cloaking the Larkspur's buoyancy sacks. And you're stuck until you can figure a way out.
Are you often a betting man?
I bet when it's a sure thing, lass.
The Doppel crossed her arms and shifted her weight to her back foot. She pursed her lips, thinking, and Ripka became acutely aware that the woman's posture was the mirror image of her own. Unsettled, she straightened her stance and clothes.
Oh, forgive me, Captain, but it is difficult to shake the body language of a personality I've been studying.
I'd rather not know the particulars.
As you like. Now, Tybalt,
wait.
Yes?
If I'm going to work with you, I have to know. When you went to see Galtro, did you wear my face?
No. I met him as myself.
Thank the skies for that.
I hesitate to elaborate, but I feel he would want you to know that he was prepared for his death. He had seen it coming, and in truth, did not expect to survive the elections. He was jabbing a rock viper, and intentionally at that. His guilt was heavy, and he was relieved to be free of it.
How can I trust you?
You can't.
I'm sorry, but we just don't have time for this right now.
Get on with it, then.
Lord Honding has been taken by the White Coat.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Have you felt any large ships move out of the city?
How would I know?
Come on, Pelkaya. We both know you've been monitoring the ships in the city to see if the Imperials have left so you can make off with the Larkspur without them giving chase.
Fine, fine. I sensed a large one moving up from the south edge of the fire line into the city, a few marks back.
South? Near the salt baths?
Sounds about right.
He's on that ship. He's got to be. Can you locate it now?
I never stopped watching it. It's in Thratia's dock, where the Larkspur was kept.
We can't go back into the city. We're all too recognizable. Pelkaya, would you consider going?
No bones, Captain. I can't get too far from the Larkspur, or I'll lose my hold over the cell hiding it. I've already lost control of a few little misdirections I left in the city.
I can go.
They all looked at the steward, the young man whose name Ripka still didn't know. He stood alongside Tibble, his uniform well pressed.
That could work. You could go in, say you're there on behalf of the Doppel. Tell Thratia she's feeling guilty and wants to make a trade. Deaton for the Larkspur.
I will not.
Easy, Pelkaya. You know Deaton and I don't want them to have access to that ship any more than you do.
You two planned with this murderer?
We didn't plan for this. She just didn't give us much of a choice. All right, new chum. I guess that means it's up to you. Think you can get her to come out here?
Certainly. It is my job to guide, after all.
Right then. We can take the flyer back to the salt baths and let you take it from there. I'm afraid we can't get much closer without being spotted. Will that be close enough?
That'll be just fine. The ferry will come for me if I call it.